Gottfried walk in on us and have a story. So I will call the St. Paul City Council Org Committee to order this morning. As is often the case, we kind of roll into Org Committee. We do not need to have a quorum in order to get started, so we will get started and expect our colleagues to join us shortly. This morning, we welcome Bryn House, our new Director of Council Operations, who will be at a future date, probably facilitating our Org Committee meetings as we talk about the business of the council at these meetings, as well as update each other on our committees, boards, and activities. Just remind people that their mic may be off or on. Check your red button and talk into it because we have masks on and we are being recorded, although not videotaped. So today on our agenda, we have an update on the 2022 priorities and work plan discussion, a continuation of a conversation from last week. We have some updates from the council leadership team just to loop people in on items such as the police chief selection committee group process, the police academy, among others. Good morning. And as well as our traditional update on committees, boards, activities, and other. And we like to put other in case other comes up, and then we can say we noticed it. So I'm kind of looking at the agenda and wanting to make sure. I don't know if we've heard that any other colleagues will or will not be in attendance formally. And I want to make sure that we talk about our 2022 priorities. By the way, it is 2-2-2-2 finally today. And our friend Two posted on Facebook that he would be wearing 2-2-2s today. He's taking it up a notch. Yeah. Tuger Zhang. His name is Two, so he's going to own this day. I like that he even added an extra 2-2 just to make it like over the top and invited others to join him. But that is not on our agenda. So I think that I would like just to pause on that, just to move things around on our agenda just a titch so that we can make sure that as many folks are here as possible when we talk about our priority and work plan discussion, if that's okay with folks. So I think it might make sense just if we want to, if our people have updates on committees, boards, activities, if we just start with that for maybe 15 minutes or so, and then we can move back to council leadership team updates or the policy work. Does anyone want to kick us off with committees, boards, and activities? I did note that it seemed like it was better for the updates to come organically than to go through the list and remind people what commissions they were on. That didn't seem to work. Didn't seem to suit people's fancy. But we can provide a list of committees and commissions at these meetings if it helps people jog their memories of which committees met this month. So I'll throw it out there if anyone has updates. I can start by just saying I continue to serve as a representative to the League of Minnesota Cities. I continue to believe it's a really important spot for us to be, as well as metro cities. They're a very reputable organization. They have bipartisan support up at the Capitol, and when we push parts of our legislative agenda through those bodies, that means that we have double the power or a huge multiplier of power in terms of our lobbying effect, as well as highlighting issues that we have in the city that apply to cities across the state. I mentioned, I think, at the last meeting that we were able to get the catalytic converters legislation into the League of Minnesota Cities legislation, so that was great. Last month, we talked about post-traumatic stress disorder and its impact on the state's finances and with medical leave, and it was a very interesting conversation, and it seems like something that will continue to grow and be an issue not only at the state level, but I think they were talking about how it applied to the city level and really highlighting that post-traumatic stress disorder is treatable. I think that a lot of times we think about some mental illnesses as things that are chronic something that you learn to cope with. post-traumatic stress disorder is something that's treatable, and they talked about how it's not just our first responders that are really experiencing trauma in COVID, but also our teachers, our medical professionals, our health care workers, our mental health care workers, you know, folks that are really pushed to the brink and really working on messaging to get people the treatment that they need early, and then also kind of managing work comp requests and stuff. So that really took up the bulk of our time, so we didn't talk much about the upcoming legislative agenda at that meeting, but I thought it was worth mentioning that it seems to be really a conversation is really centering around that topic. Any other updates? Ms. Yang?
I have joined the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, so we're having our first meeting.
Ms. Yang, I'm going to just, it looks like your mic is not only off, but is like trying to run away.
Okay. Yeah, I joined the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, where there's a lot of different stakeholders at the table. I haven't met all of them yet, but I'll be having an onboarding for it. And then for the rest of the committees that I sit on, from like the Rush Line to, you know, the Hillcrest as well. Like, we haven't had any recent meetings yet, but I've been checking in with staff about Hillcrest. And so pretty soon here, there will be a check-in coming in to all of you as well, an opportunity to get briefed on it if you're interested.
Awesome. Thank you. Any other updates? Oh, Ms. Naker and then Ms. Prince.
Thanks, Council President. A number of us sit on the Joint Property Tax Advisory Committee, and we talked recently about our legislative agendas for both the city, county, and school district. And I know many of us are getting briefed, already have, from Christian about the city's legislative agenda. But I just wanted to raise up and thank everybody for the support for our ask for the unsheltered homelessness from the governor. It's so critical that we get those dollars, and I know everybody's agreed to sign a letter of support individually, but it's imperative that we get those dollars, and there does not appear to be another source. So I'm really glad that we're all coming together on this ask. As I was saying to someone yesterday, we have so many priorities, but they really all will get shunted aside if we have families and individuals who are not sheltered. As we all know, that has to be the first thing. So thanks for everyone's work on that.
I appreciate the initiative there as well. We've talked a lot about how decisions on the statewide level about changes in services for folks with mental health issues and addiction issues have come to roost on municipalities, and particularly St. Paul as a capital city, as a place where we have Dorothy Day and other wonderful services for people to not only get out of the cold, but to make a plan to get into permanent housing. And we have transportation and other services here. And I think that means that folks look to us to help them. But it's one of those local government aid conversations where we can do this work. We will do this work. We're proud to do this work, but we need help. We can't shoulder the responsibility of paying those bills on our own when it's a statewide and probably beyond the state borders service that we're providing. And we do it well. We do it with dignity, but we need help. And so I appreciate that the initiative and the leadership, and I really hope we can get some help from the state on that as well. This has been a cold winter. Too cold. I'm sitting on my hands right now. Other updates? Ms. Prince?
A little update on the reparations Legislative Advisory Committee, although I don't attend those meetings. It is my understanding from the light's not up, but maybe, yeah, there it is. Can you hear it at all?
Yep, that's better.
Okay. In any event, it sounds like the Legislative Advisory Committee on Reparations has completed their draft of the ordinance. So that is a breakthrough. I know they're going to be doing some community forums. I don't know if Ms. Mormond would want to give us a little update.
Just really quickly, Council President Brenlow and council members, the Reparations Advisory Committee has just concluded a draft that they had been working on in two different subcommittees, and so the draft is going to be shared with each other. They'll see each other's work first tomorrow evening at their meeting. So they'll be giving you a draft ordinance and companion report. So they're hopeful that they can hammer through this in February and make sure that everybody agrees on all aspects, and they would like to share that with the public, and they were talking about at some point in March doing that. And they still have a standing request to come back and talk to you all.
Thank you, Marcia. I had not prepared Marcia for this, so thank you for being spontaneously available. And that is my understanding, that we will be having a meeting with the full LAC at some point, and thanks to the leadership group for their meeting with the conveners. I just completed my orientation with the Twin City Land Bank Board, and this is a tremendous resource for us to help businesses buy their own buildings, to do different kinds of housing projects where we can reduce the cost through land trusts and different ownership arrangements. The projects that they're doing in St. Paul right now are the Playwright Center in Ward 4. They did Indigenous Roots in my ward, which was just a great opportunity. But they are doing a lot more in Minneapolis than they are here, so let's come up with some projects for them. Visit St. Paul. Three of us here are on it, but I did want to say that they will be coming before the council org meeting to make a presentation. Over these couple of years of COVID, they are in a dire straits because of the convention and tourism business in St. Paul and around the world. And they have gone through a 40% staff cut. Their major sources of funding, which are the hotel motel tax and the parking ramp revenue, have been commensurately, non-existent. So we will be meeting with them about some of their issues. Gold Line hopefully is going to break ground in 2022. And even though we're all going to be there, today's library board meeting is an exciting one. So I look forward to hearing the presentation from the consultants and the feasibility study from the Friends of the Libraries for their capital campaign. It's a really exciting time for our libraries, along with the mayor's support of getting the Hamlin Library done as one of his top priorities. And finally, I am going to be terming out of Community Action Partnership for Ramsey and Washington County. And one thing I'll say, I encourage any of you to consider this. I think when I first went on it, it was kind of like, oh, what are we doing here? This is a lot of programs that are run by the county. And, well, now we are completely blended in our dealing with issues of poverty, housing, early childhood education, and all manner of family supports, as well as their energy assistance program, which is huge. And I think I've told you that they serve 2 out of 3 people living in poverty in Ramsey and Washington County. So you can imagine that that a large majority of those are within the city of St. Paul. So I think it's a really good gig now, even if it was less relevant 6 years ago. They were the ones who helped get our rental assistance money out to people. They were one of the quickest to turn around those checks. They've set up a number of enterprise funds within the organization, and it's really in a good place. And I think that's it. I am on several other things. We haven't had a dispatch meeting. And
that's coming, right?
I believe so. So that's it for now.
Right. And to Ms. Prince's point, she made a cattle call at one of our last org committee meetings, and now we have a full complement that will be attending the dispatch, and I think that we recognized with changes to the way we intend to dispatch 911 calls, it's really important to have us at the table for that. So I appreciate the call out. I know that there's a few seats right now. If you're terming out of, I have noticed if you like a commission or a committee and you're about to tap out or get termed out, if they sometimes can make exceptions for St. Paul because we're sort of a different city compared to the others in Ramsey County and St. Paul, but it also does provide opportunities for other people to step up. I know we're kind of looking for Ramsey County League of Local Government representative, and right now is Ms. Yang, but I think we're just looking to see if we look at that organization and what our role is there. It sounds like there's a lot of potential in the group. So just kind of looking at that. And also probably one thing we should be considering is if there's any of the roles that we're statutorily or bound by the charter to be members of, if any of them should be just on a regular rotation so that, you know, people get opportunity to do different things and someone doesn't get stuck with a 7:30 a.m. Meeting for 10 years. So we can take a look at some of those things. I did want to say, following up on your land bank comments, that I feel woefully ignorant about land banking, and I would love to learn more about it. I don't know if, like, this would be the right venue. We had talked about maybe on some of our commissions, you know, using this time to get a little update from some of the committees that we sit on. And so I just want to put that out there. I'm very interested in it, and I have a saved web page on my phone that I'm going to read about by LISC about, you know, land banking, and I just haven't. And I know, so I know enough to be dangerous, but not enough to really know. So I'd be really curious to learn more about that as well. So thanks for bringing that up on that.
Well, and it was great because I had my first board meeting in December, and this month they didn't have a board meeting, but they had orientation for new members. So it was a really good description of how it works, the different ways they approach projects. And so I can probably fill you in on some of that, but I think it'd be a great idea to have them come here.
Yeah. Well, and I think the idea with the org committee check-ins is just to make sure that we all sort of have the same base level of knowledge of, you know, what's happening out there and what's kind of in, you know, becoming a more prominent resource. And so I would love that. And it sounds like the organization already has like a 101.
Right.
So it wouldn't be a lot to ask to get that from them. Other updates? Mr. Tolbert?
I have a few. We have the full stack committee, which I co-chair. One of the things, we got a report on 2021, and I just love this number, so I figured this would be a good opportunity to share it. But with the MSP Tech Hire that we funded annually, we had 8 young people go through UX Academy Right Track Youth, and then we had 23 adult Tech Hire scholarships awarded. Of those, nearly 46% of the participants identified as women, 56% of the participants identified as a person of color. And this is the number that I like. There was a 73% wage gain on average for people with the average hiring wage of $34.15 an hour after they completed these tracks. And that was an average $14.43 wage increase for each participant, which is just absolutely amazing and worth the investment because you think about how much that's just 1 year, an hourly wage, and they're going to do that over a career. So it's really a way to move people into a living wage job. So that's something that we continue to support, and we're supporting again this year, but those were the numbers from last year. Additionally, with Full Stack, our committee yesterday talked about a new program that we are trying to, we're going to get off the ground, which is, and you guys will know I like this a lot, it's a bridge between Full Stack and Right Track, and it will help fund Right Track youth entrepreneurs who want to get into tech and entrepreneurs, and we're going to fund it through groups that work with young people. And anyone who's done the Right Track interviews knows how many of those young people want to try doing something in tech and try creating some sort of thing on their own. And so it'll give them the coaching And the way we look at it is, you know, even if, you know, like many business entrepreneurs, if it fails, it will teach them a good lesson on how to do it. It will make connections and give them the opportunity for the next time that they come around or whatnot. So it's going to focus on youth that work with underrepresented communities in the tech world, which would be people identify as person of color or women particularly. I think it's an exciting thing, and we got a lot of buy-in from our private members of private company members of Full Stack who are like, I want to mentor, I want to be a part of this, I want to make the connection. So we're going to bring that all together. It's still being built, but it's something that to watch for, and I think it'll be pretty exciting. And as you know, having Full Stack and Right Track come together always makes me happy. one other cool thing, just thinking about the work that we're going to be doing with Ling Becker and Workforce Solutions, this MSP tech hire that we did, a good question yesterday at the meeting was, what's the biggest prohibitor for people who want to join these tasks? And the money that we were using wasn't able to be used to buy devices, and that's necessary for a lot of these programs. But the money that Ling is going to be using can be used to purchase devices and will be used to purchase devices, so we'll be able to close kind of one of those gaps or obstacles for people. So that's an exciting thing to get more young people into this with the device that they need. I know three of us serve on the water board next week. They'll be presenting, based on our last meeting, what a proposal for replacing all lead pipes in St. Paul would look like in the next 10 years. And so that proposal will be brought forward next week. I know I was really heartened. I mean, obviously, the three of us that are on the board were fully supportive of doing that for the public health reasons and for all the other reasons. But our suburban members and citizen members also, the strength of their support of doing this was great. I thought the mayor from Maplewood supported it. Mara Humphreys, the chair, supported it strongly. And then Eileen Chernoff, another citizen member, she reached out to me after and said, we really need to do this. Let's work on it. So that's fantastic. Great. I know we'll need some ARP assistance with that, and that's still to be determined. But just FYI, that's going to be presented to the water board. And I know that everyone on here supports getting that important public safety initiative done as soon as possible. So those are the two. I'm on a few other committees, but they were pretty boring this month.
thank you for the updates. And just I just want to add on the way that we are measuring success with the workforce and Right Track and tech full staff work is so heartening to me. When I served on the Workforce Investment Board before it changed its name, that was, I think, the thing that was most frustrating, is they had people going through these training programs, and at the end of them, I mean, we would ask, like, what are folks making now that they've been through these programs? And it was like $10.18 an hour. And you're like, why don't we just take all the money we spent in these training programs, divide it by the number of participants, and help them buy a house? It just was ridiculous. And so to hear gains like 14 more dollars an hour, it's just really great, and that we're measuring the successes in those terms are also, I mean, I think Ling is great for this. Like, what are the barriers for participation, and how can we, because we know that's true with the police academy as well. The cost of the gear that you need to start is prohibitive for people that may not, you know, even know what a belt holster is or whatever. So I just like reducing those barriers so people can really think about the role and what they want to do is great. That's awesome. Mr. Tao, I realize that you just flew in here. Do you have updates on committees or commissions? We have started at the bottom of our agenda. So we're updates on committees, boards, and activities. Most of us have very brief ones today since it's cold in January, but yeah, not to put you on the spot.
Thank you, Council President. Council Member Necker, did you talk anything about the port?
I did not.
Okay, all right. sorry, and I apologize. I was on a call. I think most of you have already seen at the port, we've done a leadership change over there. And Lee Cougar, the president, has done an incredible job leading the port for the last 6 or so years. And it's about the right time where you do leadership changes, you know, anywhere from the tenure of 6 to 8 years. And some of the things he's done is our deal with the Midway, with the soccer stadium, did an incredible job on that. The Treasure Island and turning the old Macy building into a place of attraction, ice rink for the Minnesota Wild. And then his work over at Hillcrest. And so we're sad to see him go, but I think he's done a great job. And the port is, will be in the next couple of, you know, quarters or so. We're going to be searching for a new president. The port has evolved and have, I think, deepened its relationship with the city. And we're going to continue to foster those relationships. And we're doing a great job going all over the country and in the state on sustainability policies and plans and different types of programs. So we've become a real leader in that. I'm excited to report that back to everybody. I also want to speak a little bit about parking enforcement. Is that okay? You know, I think in Ward 1, we've had a lot of issue with semi-truck and these big trailer parking in our residential street. And our office is really frustrated about the continuation of these practices. So we like to work with DSI to maybe take a look at different classification of enforcement. So I know that our penalty matrix for regular vehicles, small vehicles, it's not going to be a burden on the constituents. But with these big corporations, the semi-truck in our city street, we need to look at maybe changing that matrix a little bit so that they get the message that they need to follow ordinance just like everybody else in the city. So those are things, something that we probably like to work on. And we welcome anybody to work with us on that.
Thank you, Mr. Tao. And parking enforcement continues to be a huge frustration around the city, particularly the semi-trucks and that kind of change of business model where semis used to, you know, circle back to the to headquarters and then, you know, go home, and now everyone's an independent contractor, no bricks and mortar, paying property taxes, and they just are parked on our residential streets. And they're not the kind of things we can just tow. That's right. A little bit of a challenge. I think Ms. Houston is working with the city attorney's office, DSI, and the police to do a policy session. Like, I think we want to dig into that. And I think the idea of, like, looking at a different fine matrix for trucks and is a great thing for us to consider as part of those meetings.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I call them in Ward 1, too. They're over by Sears. Thank you, Ms. Prince.
If I could just comment on that. I had a conversation with a business owner in Minneapolis who was facing the problem of where do my contractors park their trucks. And it dawns on me that we probably should be looking at the other side of this, which is every one of those trucks represents someone's job and livelihood. And so if we could find a place in the city where we could have some kind of truck parking facility. I mean, trucking is not a good land use, but if it were a truck parking facility representing all those individual job or business owners, it seems like it makes some sense for us to look at a solution that serves them as well. So it's not just a matter of you can't park here, but you can't park anywhere else either, other than if you rent something on your own, which could be expensive. So anyway, there might be a business opportunity side of the problem.
Yeah, we've heard that semi-trucks line the sides of rest stops as well, you know, just as using it for the same purposes. I think that's one of the conversations that should be part of our parking enforcement. Certainly the idea isn't to run entrepreneurs out of business. One thing you will recognize if you go out and do any sort of like ride-along or tagging is that a lot of the trucks are not from here. You know, they're overland trucking. So we have sort of two issues. One is our local residents, and the other is people who just pull off the highway. So I think that's part of the reason why it's challenging. I often see the trucks parked over there and wonder about St. Paul College as a potential place. It seems like they have a heck of a lot of parking. Maybe they can make a little money. but I think all these things are part of why it's not just as simple as, like, you know, well, there are residents. Well, a lot of them aren't. And sometimes they're just passing through once, so they don't give a rip about a parking ticket. Those keep on trucking. Other updates on policy committees, commissions, boards? Yes, Mr. Tao.
Council President, Council Member, one more thing is they've come to our attention that, you know, we over the last, you know, during the pandemic and even before that, we've had some issue in the community around community first public safety, especially around youth violence. And so what we're seeing now is that there's violence against Asian American youth. And I think that this year, 2022, I think we need to be very focused and strategic about bringing peace among the young people, African American youth and Hmong and Karen Asian immigrant group. As you've seen a couple weeks ago, there's a disturbing video of violence during the St. Paul, I don't know who organized it, but the walkout from the school, there was a big fight in the parking lot at Washington, and it was very, very sad, disappointing for us to come to this point, but I think this year we need to focus some energy in bringing the existing neighborhood organization and new organization that is willing to take on this work to bring young people together to share, to show that we're really a family here, and if young people stand united, it'll be a much safer community and city for everybody. I understand there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of different, there's not a lot of activity because of COVID, but that's why it's important for us to be very intentional about creating peace with our youth in the community.
Piggybacking on that, Mr. Tao, yesterday Ward 6, 7, and 5 had our quarterly meeting with East Police District, and one thing that they said has become a challenge or a trend in recent months is problems at the schools, particularly at the high schools with fighting and big melees breaking out. And it was an interesting, I think that we were kind of just learning that in real time and listening. And Councilmember Prince had some questions about SROs, and I know that the school district decided to stop using SROs, which had an impact on our policing, but now they're calling our police to come in and manage things sort of reactively. Mm-hmm. I don't know if SROs are the right way to go, but I do think that when we talk about, like, excessive consumption of city services in any other place, you know, we would be like, hey, what's going on here? But, like, the schools are sort of in a different bucket, and it does seem like maybe an opportunity to talk with the school board about the impacts to our own force if they're kind of serving as the security system for the schools, like, after problems happen. I know the incident that you talk about at Washington happened across the street at Municipal Services for the city's Parks Department. But the school knew that there was a problem. The kids all went across the street, and there was no one there to help manage the problem. So it feels like we need to do something a little bit more holistic with the school district. And, you know, I think starting with sort of a, like, how do we find peace conversation, and then just how do we get in front of these problems instead of waiting till something happens and someone gets hurt? Or as we saw, I mean, that this wasn't a large fight, but yesterday students were shot right outside their school in Richfield. So it's serious. The stress and tension and anxiety and lack of activities are adding up. And the police were saying that it's also been taxing their ability to serve the community beyond the schools, particularly at recess, or sorry, at when they adjourn for the day. So so I think that's, you know, may rise to the top more quickly than we would like, just because it's important and it's happening in all the high schools. So Other, Mitchell Ali, we are, we're at, we started at the bottom. Now we're here.
Okay.
So if there's, if you have any quick updates on committees, boards, activities, otherwise we will shift gears to council leadership team updates.
I can be brief that I appreciate Councilmember Tolbert and I kind of switched places on the Transit Advisory Board, and I think it's an exciting time to be joining the TAB on the Met Council because there's so much federal support coming, and so our public works are in those conversations. They come to those meetings too. We kind of go into those regional committee meetings with like a united front as a city, but I would like to get council member input into that a little more too, to understand, you know, here's the funds that we know are coming, here's decision points at the Met Council, so I can advocate for that. And so that's something that I am newly a part of, but excited to do more this year with. So that's my one update.
Great, thank you. Yes, thanks for the update on that. And there have been some shifts in our board position, so I think it will be interesting to hear the new perspectives from new members kind of taking those seats. I know Ms. Prince loved CAP RW, and I quit. I couldn't stand it. So it's like sometimes the right person's the right person for the group. And So I'm going to switch us up to council leadership team updates, which I think will move right into the priority 2022 priorities conversation. Folks know that on a weekly basis, the council president, council vice president, and HRA chair have been meeting with the council director of council operations and the chief budget officer, the interim council director of operations, to make sure that the directors have direction from the council in terms of what our priorities are. To manage things kind of that on scheduling, and then we work as a group to get information back to council members so folks are informed about items in as close to real time as possible. When I say close to real time as possible, I will tell you that I got a message from Deputy Mayor Tincher during this meeting that says there was an officer involved shooting in Minneapolis just recently, so we may be hearing more about that. And so just so folks know, if they start getting messages, she hasn't given updates beyond that. It sounds like so far there's nothing happening in the city, but undoubtedly there will be. I have a couple updates I just want to share back with colleagues, and I know Ms. Naker has a ARPA update as well. So the things, and if there's other things that we forgot, Mr. Tolbert or Ms. Naker, just let me know. But the things I wanted to circle in the group with is we have been requesting an update about Community First Public Safety on a quarterly basis, and we have scheduled an update for February 16th and then again February 23rd to get Community First Public Safety updates. Right now we're working on agendas for those items. The 16th, I believe, will be primarily an update from County Attorney John Choi, with information about the gun violence reduction leadership group that's been meeting informally really for all of 2021 and into 2022 in response to increased gun violence, homicides, and carjackings. And he will have information about the work of the group and particularly about group violence intervention and what's also known as focused deterrence. And the evolution of that method of reducing crime. And I know that we recognize that crime reduction is a 360-degree solution necessary type of problem. And so this is one aspect that we'll be looking at and get some information from from County Attorney Choi at that meeting. We will also hear a bit from the agenda is still in kind of in flux, but we'll hear from the police with a quick update from the mayor's office about the Office of Neighborhood Safety. And we were also informed that the mayor will be doing his State of the City address on February 22nd. The focus of that conversation will be on public safety. And so on the 23rd, the morning after the State of the City, we'll get an update from the mayor's office on basically the plan that they'll be laying out at that speech. So that will include Office of Neighborhood Safety as well as some of the other initiatives and the work of the Community First Public Safety Commission and beyond. So there is just too much to stick all into 1 week, so we decided to put it into two, and that gives us some space for questions as well. So those two things will be coming up in the next 2 weeks. So next Wednesday and the following Wednesday. Am I missing a Wednesday? Yes, not the 9th, the 16th and the 23rd. Okay. So there's that. Second of all, the council, we talked last week about the appointment of the next chief of police. The leadership team invited the HR, has been inviting the HR department to come talk to us about timelines and support that they are required to bring to council as we lead the beginning part of this process. Holly, if you are, we basically talked to the HR team. I think that they came with very little information, given how many times we've asked them and made clear that we want to start our side of the process and don't want to be the ones that were holding up the community process around electing or appointing our next chief. They have said that they will get back to us in 2 weeks' time. They're invited back to the leadership team. But in the meantime, I'm having Holly pass out the existing qualifications for the police chief in the city of St. Paul. And the first step of this process will be for the council to establish qualifications. We could just take these qualifications and put them in ordinance form, have a first reading, a second reading public hearing, and a third reading, and they would be set. We could adjust these and put them in for the ordinance process. We're in charge of that side of it. I think that the desire at this point is to reach out to stakeholders in like our Community First Public Safety Commission, as well as other advocacy organizations, as well as law enforcement, to just see if there's any changes, glaring changes that we should be making before we enter it into the system. And then, of course, because it is an ordinance, we would have a built-in public hearing and public process around it. But I just wanted people to get a chance to take a look at it and see if there's anything that was particularly problematic or stuck out to them. I know there are some conversations about the years of administrative level experience, which is definitely a barrier for, you know, folks that have been in for 5 or 4 in administrative experience. The last time we established these qualifications, one of the conversations, I'm going to look to you, Mr. Tolbert, were around the number of sworn officers that the candidate had to have been part of. There was a fight over, was it supposed to be 300 or 500 or 600? I can't remember if we went down or up.
Yeah, I think we went up, because obviously it was, depending on the numbers, it limits what department's potential chief can come out of. Obviously, you can come out of St. Paul if you've achieved a certain level, or Minneapolis. I would guess Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, but I don't even know if they have 500. I don't think the Ramsey, I would, my guess would be Ramsey County Sheriff's Office does not have 500 sworn officers. Maybe the State Patrol would, but it would limit for Minnesota people. I mean, we'd be open for national recruits, but I think that was the number one thing.
Yeah.
The other, at least maybe this was more fire chief, but I think that additional education beyond a bachelor's degree has been talked about. You know, my opinion is it's easier to just, for lack of a better term, weed people out, have too many people apply and weed them out. But I know that it's important to have some experience. I mean, if you're coming from a police department of 10 people, it's going to be a little bit different experience managing the St. Paul Police Department than, you know, Litchfield Police Department or something like that.
Yeah. And this, I think the existing qualifications are to kind of echo what you said, are seem to be oriented towards an internal candidate. So anyways, take a look at these. I think our next step would be to just informally reach out to some stakeholders and get their feedback on this before we codify it and bring it forward. And again, it can change after we bring it into the ordinance process at the city. But I think we would like to put this forward when we also know how people can apply to be part of the commission, what the timetable looks like for the appointment. But we have made it clear to our human resources department that it is our intention to get a police chief in place when the current chief steps down. And that means our work is cut out for us because undoubtedly there'll be community meetings with the candidates after they're selected by the committee. So we will have more to update in a few weeks, but just wanted people to start ruminating on the qualifications.
There's a question on that.
Yeah.
If we have questions about things that aren't on this, like how do we investigate their record of service and any like behavioral or disciplinary issues, like how do we gauge their understanding of our community? There's a lot of things that I think are important as part of just vetting for this leadership role. Do we direct those to HR and to Director Newborn, or what's the best way to get those questions answered if we have follow-ups on what's on here? And I can just also ask her directly. But
well, I mean, I think it's a really good question. I think that this is like kind of a rare opportunity where we partner with HR, but we are solely responsible for establishing the qualifications. And so I think, you know, technical questions about, you know, how do we vet these things would be well directed towards HR. I think things that are missing, like, you know, direct qualification relating to cultural competency are things that we should simply add if we think it's important. And so in that regard, I think if people have immediate things that they'd like to see added, we can compile them into this Google Doc. And then I think before we put it in Legistar, we'd want folks to sign off on what we're going to bring forward. And then again, if somebody shows up at a public hearing and they're like, why doesn't it say this? We could be like, because you weren't here earlier. Let's put it in. But I think other and technical stuff, I mean, part of this is just getting the applicants in the door. And then the process after that would be the committee chooses which candidates they would like to move forward for the mayor. So at that time, they can dig in deeper on the resumes and background of the applicants. So this is mostly the cattle call. And I do think that at the end of the day, the real question is, you know, are we going to engage in a national search and try to find somebody from outside of the St. Paul that can lead this police department? Or do we believe that our leader is within? We have an amazing police culture in comparison to many, many cities across the nation, and it's a challenging time. And so the qualifications certainly point us in one direction or the other, or can make it a wide open field. Ms. Naker.
Thanks, Council President. Two thoughts on that. One, I really appreciate Councilmember Jalali's question, and I wonder if one piece of information we could get from HR that would be helpful would be what sort of standard screening they're going to use in addition to the qualifications, because we don't say anything in here about a background check or sort of processes that minimally everyone will go through, and I think we would likely want to add to that, but it would be nice to know these are the qualifications, but also by a matter of default, everyone is going to get X sort of check. So that would be one suggestion. And then I personally think that we should cast a wide net. We don't know what we don't know. It could be that our next police chief is waiting in the wings in the St. Paul Police Department, and it could be that there's someone phenomenal not in the St. Paul Police Department. And so I would like our qualifications to be what we actually need in a police chief and not targeted to ensure that our next police chief comes from one department or city or another. But right now, I don't know what 6 years and 500 sworn officers means in terms of number of departments who would be eligible and why 6 years is an important number. And so if there's background information that we can get on how those were derived, and how many cities that limits us to and that kind of thing, I think that would be helpful in looking at these.
Yep, and we can mass questions that we have, particularly for HR. I think that some of the answers to your questions are that they're simply political jockeying that was put in place to choose a chief. So maybe the numbers are, I think to your point, we'd like to make sure that we're advertising for the chief that we want. And that's what's great about us having this opportunity. But to things about how many cities are there with 500 sworn officers and who would we be limiting or not limiting? The 6 years of administrative level of experience, I think, is just, you know, where's that line? It's probably different from if you're the head of the Department of Public Safety and a desk versus out on the streets in the city. So I think it's that's a challenging thing to pin down, but we could and should. So if there are particular questions, maybe we can we're going to saddle our new director, Brenhouse, with the work of wrangling this. So if you have questions about the particulars around the HR piece of this, maybe send them to Bryn, and we will work with HR to get them answered. If you have amendments or additions or changes that you'd like to see, share them with Bryn. And then we will plan on circling back in 2 weeks to talk about, you know, where we're at with the qualifications, what were the answers to the questions asked, and intend to get rolling on the process. I mean, we have to establish a commission, so that will take a little time. That commission will need to put out the call. So it is, we really, believe it or not, are running out of time. It's 2:22 today, so... So Bryn is going to be our point person on this. We thought, what a great way to cut your teeth in our council office is like helping us get our next chief in place. So that's exciting. I'm going to turn it over to Rebecca Quick for ARPA updates.
Thanks, Council President. As all of you know, I've been asked to take the lead on helping us get a coherent strategy for how to spend our American Rescue Plan dollars and get to that shared decision with the administration so that we're not seeing things come in front of us piecemeal and we all know where we're going with this massive investment. I really want to thank everybody for taking time over the last couple of weeks to share your priorities with me. Hopefully you've all seen an email in your inbox with a list of what I heard from everybody. If you don't see something there, it's either because it's already been allocated ARP funding or because it was ineligible, and I worked with Ms. Houston on kind of figuring that out. And feel free to tell me if you don't, if something's not there that you think should be there. I was absolutely not making any other edits to what I heard. Otherwise, everything else should be there. I also attached a list of all of the other departments' project proposals that have been submitted to the mayor's office. You'll see in there that some of them have already been allocated funding. Most of them haven't. The hope in sending those to you was just if you look through that list, and it's a lot of rows, but it's actually a pretty interesting read. And if there's anything there that catches your eye as something that also is a top priority for you, maybe in addition to what you said, to give you a chance to list that too. And then the Excel document I sent just asks you to rank 1 through 5, 5 being the top priority, not 1, your top 5 priorities. And the goal there is just to get to a place where we can advocate for some shared priorities. Obviously, all of us can separately work on and advocate for things we want to see that aren't shared, but to get to a place of, you know, 3 to 5 really, really strong shared priorities amongst all of us that we can advocate for with the administration. So if you have questions, let me know, and hopefully you'll have a chance to do that before end of day tomorrow so that we can move this forward quickly. And then finally, I've reached out to, I think, everybody, and I'm hopefully talking to several people today about a very near-term kind of emergency business assistance fund that Director Goodman and I have been talking about. I want to get your thoughts on it because we've been talking about not bringing things in piecemeal and doing things before we have this agreed-upon strategy, but there are some really dire economic development needs that we're hearing about and that we might want to move ahead more quickly. So I want to come to you to get your thoughts on that. So that's what that 15-minute meeting with me is, and that's it.
Thank you. And last on this section is just to let folks know that yesterday the approval was given to post the Police Academy for round 1 of this year. That was a council priority. We wanted to just even out the policing throughout the year and not have to deal with these big dips and valleys, and that facilitated the office, the police budget, to be predicated on the we're at an all-time low of officers and instead just have a steadier number. So that will be posted hopefully today, and get that process rolling. And I think it'll be incumbent upon us to watch that and also make sure that, I mean, keeping in mind that from the time it is posted until the time an academy is completed is about 6 months. So, and then, so if something's posted this July, that will be in position, significantly later than that, transitioning from field training officers to officers. So, that is today. So, and I do feel, I will say that I think that our check-ins and these updates are helping the administration move forward on getting these things moving. And I'll leave it at that. Okay, so the next thing on my list is just policy sessions. We have been working in partnership with Ms. Houston on mapping out our policy sessions and our priorities for 2022, and following up with individuals about their priorities and if we're in alignment. And so I think we had a great conversation last week, kind of teed this up, and we will move to on to the update on City Council 2022 priorities and work plan discussion. Again, our work plan is always a work in progress. At any point, Mr. Tao brought up the schools and the violence at schools, and I think that something like that can jump up on our list quickly. So we're not by any means like hemming ourselves in by this, but just helping define where our shared priorities are. And so, Ms. Houston, if you want to walk us through where we're at and then maybe map out our how things are looking for 2022, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Good morning, Council President Bren Moen and council members. What you have before you is, last time we met, we talked about different organizational meetings or policy sessions, and I took that feedback and created this list just to come back and review with you, and then we can continue to make edits, and I can update you on the what's been scheduled so far at the end. So to start at the top, based on last year's priorities and things that I heard last week and working with Council President, we listed six priorities for the council: ensuring equitable and responsible use of city resources, improving neighborhood safety and eliminating gun violence, supporting economic growth and development, expanding and preserving affordable housing, integrating climate action resilience strategies, and providing excellence in city and constituent services. I'll stop there, and if there's any edits, but I think that's a solid six.
And I'll just share that that's work that we did collaboratively. I think it's things that we've heard people saying throughout the course of the year, and we tried to use action verbs to show that we're working on these things. And it was great when we worked on Bryn's press release to be able to say that she would be, working with us to advance these priorities. And I actually, when I sent it to Ms. Jalali, she added supporting economic growth and development, which was a miss initially. But so, I mean, it's a team effort, and we appreciate that. But it's great to just kind of say, here's what we are focused on. That, again, doesn't mean that your own ward office doesn't have different priorities, but as a council, we're working to move these, hard to argue with priorities forward. Ms. Naker.
Thanks, Council President. I saw this list before and liked it then, but I just like it even more hearing it now. We didn't even use the same verb for the action verbs, which is amazing in bureaucracy. I think the value can't be understated of being able to talk about these things. I've been having a number of conversations recently where sort of the question is asked, what is the city doing about X, or what is the city's view of Y? And I know that, the seven of us all are always working on a myriad of day-to-day, small, seemingly mundane issues, but they all add up to really big things. And I think being able to talk about, well, actually, we have these six priorities that everything that we're doing really rolls up to, is super helpful in helping people know that we have a sense of direction and we have goals. So I appreciate this on a variety of fronts.
And I think just it underscores, too, I've heard many of us pointing to our housing plan as a document that helps keep us on track and shows us where we're making progress. I think that the new Climate Action Resiliency Plan is another document that will help us measure our successes and push us to move forward. And this also could help us determine where we need more plans to really firm up what does it mean when we say providing excellence in city and constituent service. And we had that discussion last week at audit committee. Check back in. And so it's sort of like, can we take that information and make a plan out of it, and helps us know that we've either come up short, or that we've had some successes, or that we need to adjust the plan. So it is, I agree. So thanks, everybody. That was definitely a group work initiative.
Moving on to the next section. So we have spent in the past some time discussing what's an organizational committee meeting, what's a policy session, and what's an update. And I think what I heard loud and clear last week, or whenever we met, was that sometimes we don't always know what they are. Sometimes it's very apparent. So I just put everything in one list together, because sometimes things evolve and we'll need multiple meetings, which would be considered a policy session. And on this document, but I didn't print it off, I do have definitions to describe how we think about each of these meetings. So this list includes parking enforcement, which I believe we are thinking it's a policy session. As Council President mentioned earlier, we're working with on scheduling that. Neighborhood safety, monthly updates is what I heard. And so I think what we talked about last time was that the council really envisions the neighborhood safety updates, including all of the different people and partners that work within that area and space, which would include the violence reduction group, which is John Choi, the St. Paul Fire Department CARES program that is in this year's budget, the police department. We have our own community first public, or we have our own. Let's see. I think that means the COP grant. Yes. I'm like losing the acronym. Community Organizational Partnership Program, Community First Public Safety Awards, as well as the initiative the mayor and the council started in 2019, which includes Healing First, Awakenings, some of the free rec programming, and other programs. Also, as Councilmember Prince mentioned, the River Center Visitors Authority. So let me just go back. So the neighborhood safety meeting, as Council President Brenmoan mentioned, is February 16th, and then a follow-up on the 23rd. The River Center Visitors Authority will be coming before you on March 9th to talk about the tourism recovery ramp plan and other things that I believe Visit St. Paul is working on and also maybe struggling with. And then there's a need to talk about street lighting and copper stripping and theft. So that is also a multi-department issue that I will coordinate with Public Works and also the police department, and there may be other departments as well that need
to be
included.
Parks is involved as well.
Parks, yep. and then financial empowerment. This is a topic that we talked about at the budget committee meeting. So they presented their budget, and it was just asked that they come back and give an update and also provide information on what programs do they have and what are their funding sources, because that wasn't exactly clear at that time. Procurement, Section 3, presentation to the council. I've gotten some clarity, and the key question that Council President Prince and I believe Councilmember Tao and Councilmember Naker want answered on that. I have reached out to Christiane and am waiting for a response. Climate justice is scheduled for April. We're planning that will be an annual update. We had Great River Passage on there. Department of Safety, Customer Convenience, Rent Stabilization, Organized Trash Collection, and then our weekly or our monthly organizational committee meetings, which we are here today. So that is the list. So I guess, is there anything to add? A lot of these still need to be set up.
I think in the school piece, I think, is something that may need further conversation. And then I saw Ms. Prince had a hand up. Ms. Naker. Ms. Prince?
I think the meeting with the reparations Legislative Advisory Committee was something that I think we want to add.
Thank you, Councilmember Prince. I do have that on my schedule, but not on this list. So,
Ms. Naker.
Thanks, Council President. I think rent stabilization needs to be a more regular update, at least until we know what is going on. So I think we have neighborhood safety monthly, and maybe we should also have rent stabilization monthly until we have more clarity.
Okay. Thank you, Council President Brenmon, and Councilmember Naker. And I believe at the BRC meeting they did have some updates on that, so we should be able to get that shortly.
Just ask BRC, and we'll be informed.
Yeah. Well, I know that the mayor's office had been reaching out to council offices to set up time to go through some of the community process on looking at the ordinance itself. I don't know if there was more than that at the BRC meeting today, but I do agree that I think we've all made it clear that hearing about it in a piecemeal manner is challenging for us to understand and also to share back with our community members who are asking questions. Did you have something to add?
Well, the only thing, I had my meeting with John Grebner yesterday, and he talked about that they are going to be having Cura put together the process, that they're still accepting recommendations of people to serve on it, that there's a timeline. I don't know, others of you may have had that meeting already, but it's starting to take some shape. And then Nicole Goodman and Munir are working on the implementation portion of it. It continues to trouble me that that our HRA director is part of figuring out how to implement rent stabilization, because I don't think it really fits as an operational issue for PED or the HRA. And it seems like Kirsten Birch is our fair housing coordinator, and it just seems like that is where that should be. So I'll put that out there in case anyone else is concerned about this. I think Nicole has such a full plate with the $70 million housing program, with hiring staff, with working on the impacts of rent stabilization, that I just don't understand how she fits into the implementation phase of that program.
Council President Brenmon, Councilmember Prince, thank you. I will add youth violence, that I think extends to activities as well as the SRO question and police question at schools, as well as reparations, and then make rent stabilization regular updates. For the HRA meetings, I have the CARES CDBG funding update, an update on affordable housing, the ARP money that is dedicated for 30% AMI. Last year, we learned about tax increment spending. That was part of the changes as the legislature last year, and we have potentially $28.1 million to spend, and we need to come up with a spending plan. I'm not recalling the date, but that is an immediate need and something that needs to be done over the next year.
We need to allocate the money or at least move the money by the end of this year and then spend it by the end of 2025.
Thank you. So that's very important.
Just so I can add on, it's interesting after Councilmember Prince's position, but we asked we've met with everybody here and have our full list of everything, and we asked PD to meet who the point person is, and Director Goodman said she's the point person to us, at least. I don't know if she's actually going to be the one working on it, but on this initiative.
Okay.
We'll be meeting with her.
It's like I'm trying to think of, what is it, Rhinos, Republicans in name only. It's like point person in name only or something. It's me. I mean, it's hard to follow up on all that stuff, so I think it's, if we have to allocate or make a decision by the end of this year, it's only February, but the TikTok goes
by. I don't think it's that, and this is what I need to confirm, but I think the money needs to be moved out of the current districts into a general district with some sort of plan. I suspect we can write it pretty broadly, but then the money needs to be spent by the end of 2025, or it goes back into the districts or away. That's my understanding. I don't think we've engaged the city attorney's office enough on this, but the League of Minnesota Cities has a pretty... I'm taking my information from League of Minnesota Cities brief. So, but we're watching that one, so.
Great.
And, I mean, Holly's information was fantastic. No one's that she sent back in probably November or December was right on, so.
Well, it's a huge, huge pot of extremely flexible money. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you're watching that as HRA and that Ms. Houston's on it, too. Yeah, almost $30 million. That's a lot of dough.
Councilmember, or Council President Brenmoan and Councilmember Tolbert, I did talk with Director Goodman, and that is something that she wants to get in front of you very soon. So we are working on getting that scheduled. She thought that maybe this would be a good setting, and I'll talk with you, Chair Tolbert, but maybe chairing an org meeting for that discussion.
Oh, gee, I'll have to catch up on the conversation.
Yeah. It's the advantage of seeing people in person, right? Hallway conversations. I caught her. Okay. And then housing updates quarterly. And they're still working on placing a housing director there. So hopefully we can get that person on board and then get those updates. Greater MSP, we haven't talked to in a couple years, but they're an important partner that the city council does support. And then major economic developments. We had a great update from Melanie last year and looking to do the same. And then new programs and investments. That should also be in the org meeting. And I did send out a list so I can follow up and see what new programs that you would be interested in hearing about. Is there anything else, Chair Tolbert, that you would like to add on this list, or that maybe you have that I don't, or I can also circle back with Adam too?
I think we'll probably have to add full stack to it.
Okay.
Full stack update.
And Mr. Tolbert and council colleagues, we did talk about using this 10 o'clock meeting time flexibly to make sure that if we have a protracted report that's coming to HRA, that maybe we put it at 10 as opposed to having it at 2 and going till 3:30 and then having our council meeting pick up right afterwards, because I know that's a pretty good stretch for folks when it happens. So if we can see that as a longer update, the worst thing is when we're not done talking about something and we really have to go to the council meeting. So we'll be mindful of that and just using the space for updates appropriately.
And the other one, and I think this would either be at council or HRA, but I think our annual workforce update, especially considering how much investment we'll be having from ARP. Director Becker is just going gangbusters, so it's great. It's always a fun, it's always a great update.
Yeah, it's like you just get in and go for the ride. She's amazing. Yeah. Ms. Nanker.
Thanks, Council President. Just a suggestion, Ms. Houston, sort of to the point about using time effectively. I wonder if housing updates quarterly and ARP affordable housing might be combined. I feel like those are going to be really related topics anyway. And then greater MSP, and I know we're not at the other section of the suggestions yet, but one of the things from other that I really would like to hear about is the reporting on city demographic and economic trends. And I know that Chair Tolbert has also requested our economic development strategy multiple times. I think the update on economic trends, economic development strategy, and greater MSP together would make a lot of sense for greater MSP to hear about those things and for us to hear about how their work is affecting economic development here too. So just a suggestion for some combinations there.
I think that's a great idea, and I know at least last year they were saying they were going to have an economic development strategy to present. Well, they've been saying that for a while, but it would be good to stay on them.
Well, to the point at the top of this conversation, one of our priorities is supporting economic growth and development, so, and it doesn't have a plan. So, I mean, I think that could be the next thing to tackle in that regard. And I just want to share that on the demographic and economic trends too, that I just got rid of the last state demographer report that we got. We don't necessarily need her to come back and report to us, but I do think getting kind of an updated version of that would be mm-hmm. helpful. It is astounding how different St. Paul is than the rest of the state in terms of our age demographics and our diversity, our renter majority, and so on. But we are absolutely a ready workforce, and I think that it's an advantage and that we need to keep making that clear. Ms. Jalali.
I would just add in that, or just kind of agreeing with what people are saying, I think that having a sort of comprehensive work plan for economic development would help, or something approximating that, because I feel like we have a council version of climate work, community first public safety work, and housing, but that piece is bigger and it's also connected to a lot of different things, and so I think it ends up being like in pieces across some of the other existing plans, but not necessarily like its own articulated thing. And so I guess I'm hungry for that too. I really value getting big picture step backs where you can see at a glance, kind of to what Councilman Naker was saying, the picture of economic development and growth in our city in a holistic way, because so often our council hears of projects just on an individual level as they're moving through the planning process. And, you know, one time I had my former legislative aide, Matt, just like put together a big list that was like, what's everything that we voted on in our ward and what does it amount to? How many new units? What's the breakdown of affordability? Because we just wanted to understand, like, how much housing did we support this year? And that was actually like very illuminating, because we could say, here's like 300 new homes in Ward 4. And Kayla, who was the then housing director, also created something sort of similar, because we'd asked for it, that was like, here's all the investment along the green line in your ward since it started. And she had both city data and some other like external research that's been done. And it just helped us be able to articulate, like, you know, we made a huge public investment in this transit corridor. Here's what has been built in the city since then. And it even had like a map with little dots along it, and we could recognize like, yep, that's the Ritter-Walton project. And like, yep, those are the three new buildings that came up in the Raymond University area. And it just helps you get out of, I mean, speaking for myself, it helped me get out of like the minutiae of individual things and just have a pulse on like what is happening at a big level. And I sometimes realize, like, oh, I knew the data on, like, the housing shortage from 3-4 years ago, but there has been, like, a lot of work in progress since then. I don't know it now. And so I just find those big picture reports really valuable. I know that we're hiring on a housing director. I know that we're working through all that. But I guess it just underscores why that's so important and we need that capacity. And whenever there has been just a high-level report to the HRA, not on, like, a housing sub-program that we do, but just, like, the state of housing, I personally find it very grounding, and it's, you know, it's part economic development, part specifically housing. So I guess I'm just playing back to you all. Like, I really feel interested in this, and I want to keep building it out because I think it just helps all of us, and it helps us engage in other, like, policy discussions more appropriately and accurately, because it's like the ground truth of what's happening in our community in the market. Mm-hmm. So that's all. I just wanted to add in my 5 to 10 to 12 to 75 cents.
I think that also was you know, on a more micro level, I think that conversation was, it was illuminating when we looked at that for downtown. I know that there was some, BOMA in particular was like, no, don't change over all these buildings to housing. And you know, there was kind of a tension there. And then when it was like, wait a minute, what does a healthy city have in terms of a balance of office space versus housing? And we learned that really a lot of housing is necessary to have a vibrant downtown. And so there was sort of a pushback against something that we shouldn't have been pushing back on. And it was because we were too micro and not macro enough. And I definitely think that conversation that your folks are teeing up is more relevant than ever post-COVID. And coast, you know, with just our, you know, kind of changes in working from home, working in offices. Mr. Tolbert had a hand up, and then Ms. Neger.
Yeah, I want to say I think you're exactly right. And if one of the things that I've been trying to push PD to do, if you noticed through the budget, was have some sort of general strategy and present it to us from the planning department, from the economic development department, from the housing department, so that we can kind of have some sort of North Star. And I think if you can articulate this, and I suspect my colleagues to PD, I think that would be really helpful, because I think they think I'm the only one who wants that, and I'm trying to speak on behalf of all of us when that. But I do think it's really helpful to have some sort of North Star that guides what we're trying to do and to step back and take a bigger picture look on it, especially with economic development. I mean, for example, you know, this year, in terms of economic development, I mean, I think commercial vitality is going to be the big thing that we need to support, because we could lose it with the COVID numbers or things like that. And it's like, I don't necessarily even need to agree what the initiative is, but let's have some focus on what we're going to put our money towards or what we're going to focus on. Or like, for example, we've done 30% AMI in housing the last couple of years, and we've produced 30% AMI housing projects. So it's been
Some great new projects.
Yeah, exactly. And that's great. I mean, that's what the goal was. And it'd be great to be able to do that both from planning and from economic development as well, rather than feeling like everything's kind of piecemeal or in the forest, rather, looking at
this.
So. But yeah, if you could articulate that, I think it would be helpful to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I absolutely will.
Yeah. It really feels like the plan around supporting economic growth and redevelopment is like becoming sort of a work project. Ms. Nick, Oh, sorry.
I didn't mean to cut into it. It's just to sort of tie up these thoughts here is that I do feel that we have smart sub-plans for a bunch of strategies. Like, we know about commercial corridors. We have a 4D program. Like, we have, I could just name like 6 to 10 things right now. It's like the more I name, the more I remember we have. But I often personally struggle to ground myself in, like, what's the big picture uniting vision around it? And so I know good work is happening, but the sort of, like, master concept is always a little hazy to me. That's really it. So, and sorry, Councilman.
No, thank you. And, Ms. Jolly, I was just going to agree with you and Councilmember Tolbert. And we've been talking about this need for the big picture in terms of economic development and housing specifically, but I actually wonder if maybe even stepping back more would be helpful, and having some of those metrics in a variety of different categories. I mean, things like crime rate and number of miles of bike lanes paved and amounts of investments in different levels of housing and number of evictions. And, I mean, there's sometimes I think if we don't have a sense of shared reality, then policy proposals that come our way from many sides claiming many different things are harder to process together. So maybe there's sort of like a city report card on a variety of issues that maybe we could brainstorm, and this could be a great another first project. But it would be a way to have you help see and have all of us kind of see where we're at. And to Ms. Jalali's point, often we hear about these things in silos, but it's actually not just about housing or economic development or parkland or those kinds of things, but the city picture as a whole. And I know it just got bigger.
We might have just, for me, just crossed the place of, like, we can do anything, but we can't do everything. But I think it is a good goal that we should be shooting for. Ms. Jalali.
Well, maybe to sort of operationalize it a little, I would find a lot of value in, like, having that dashboard for the city. And maybe if we could make clear what would be compelling data from each department that's, like, the top line, like, we made this much investment in, like, street reconstruction, and now we have this many new miles and this much of, you know, new bike infrastructure. Or here's like at a top line how many new units and homes we've created, and here's the breakout, and just whatever the big number is that helps. Because that's, I agree with you, like when we don't have the same ground truth, then we get all this community feedback, but I need often more like grounding in what it is, because there's kind of how community is experiencing the community, and then there's like the quantitative information, and it's all kind of together, and it's important to weigh it together. So maybe, yeah, I'll just put some thought to you into how we could get the information we hope for, and recognizing it can be laborious to gather, but if we build in systems over time, I think it would serve both us and future councils who are like trying to make decisions for the community. So,
because it's most valuable if it's constantly updated, you know, so it's got to have that built into it. Ms. Yang.
Thanks. I want to add that I feel that it's also a great way to be transparent with our constituents as well, because I have been getting asked by a handful of entrepreneurs of color. They're wondering, well, what has the city done to support, how much money have they invested into communities of color and our businesses of color as well, and can we see the numbers? And so that's something that I'm even going to have to connect with Director Goodman about. So, like, I think the report card term just is a really great way to even summarize, like, what we're asking for, just really wanting to see the data and the results of our work.
Yeah. And it seems like in a situation like that, like, starting with our economic development and then expanding it beyond to our city, you know, may be a way to, like, just pilot it and get it going. I also do want to just hone in a little bit on Councilmember Jalali mentioned, like getting grounded in facts. And I do feel like in current politics, the facts are whatever somebody says they are. And facts can ruminate around and be circulated as truth. And if we have no way to get back to what really are the facts, or a place to point people, it is really hard to ground it in that. There are times that in community conversations where I'm like, what? How is this even, like, being considered as fact? But when you're in that setting, you can get into the if you're explaining, you ain't gaining kind of mode. And so I think being able to say, you know, that used to be true, or that's something that we have been concerned about, and here's where you can find more information, and just point to a statistic that folks can believe in, would be helpful for us, because I do think sometimes we end up designing policy or responses to things based on what folks think are facts, as opposed to what really are the facts. And I think I agree, Ms. Yang, even just trying to answer constituents, if you are able to say, you know, here's what programs we have, here's what we've done in the past year. I know one example of that is our Inspiring Communities program. If you look at the breakout, it is a fantastic program that has done exactly what we wanted it to do, and wouldn't know that unless you had the data in front of you to say, oh, wow, this, you know, we got this many homeowners of color in homes, and percentage-wise, it was half. This is where we did the builds. This is in it. So I do think it help gives us that tool in which to respond factually to our constituents and communities. All right, I want to keep an eyeball on time. I know that we are always scheduled to 11:30. We always have a little cushion, but it is 11:33, so I just want to make sure. Ms. Naker, and then back to Ms. Houston.
Thanks. Super quick on the other category. The other I wanted to bring up was the traffic engineer, which I think I didn't realize we, according to Section 152.10, require an annual report on that, but I think that goes perfectly into parking enforcement. So I would just loop those two together. That's it for me.
Council President Bryn Mohn, Councilmember Naker, thank you. The other list are identified as potential memos, reports, or briefings to council members. Last year, I worked on going through the administrative code and seeing what was required reports to the council, and so that's a list. And so it's probably due time to look at, do we get these? Do we want these? Does anything need to be updated? Because some of the things work has changed, and so, but it doesn't. Our code doesn't reflect any changes. And then just real quick, I think dashboards and scorecards are awesome, and we're behind the curve on that. And that's, I would just flag ARP modernization as a potential, you know. Just put that in the back of your mind.
Absolutely. And if folks had a chance when Ms. Naker sent out the list of requested investments, The modernization of city service, I like try to pick stuff out of there that I thought we should move forward, and it was a sad list. I didn't see any really huge innovative changes there. It's like what you're talking about with using technology as a dashboard. There was some that were like looking to upgrade like animal control tracking systems and stuff. That's really things that should just be part of a city budget. So look through that. But I think that that's one thing that we could unite around, making sure that our modernization of city service money is spent to modernize city services. I know Ms. Yang was considering that for DSI investments as well, and I didn't see much of that in the modernization of city services list either. And it could be because it's funded elsewhere, but look through the list and see if there's anything in there that tickles your toes. Ms. Prince.
Yeah, I just wanted to say on vendor outreach program report, Section 84, that could be folded into the Section 3 policy session. That is part of the same program that's designed to ensure that local residents and businesses are having first opportunity to contract, and women and BIPOC people.
So you're saying to move that into Section 3 conversation?
Yeah, that could be. At least, I mean, if I think it's probably, well, I know it's worthy of a annual report, because when it was developed, it was the most far-reaching vendor outreach program in the country, and it is a really good ordinance. So in any event, that might be able to, at least this year, be folded into that.
Thank you. Great. Council President Brenmoan, council members, I do not have anything else to discuss. I've made these notes and can send an update.
Great. So, again, I'm working like living, breathing document that can be changed, but I think it just helps us guide our conversations and our priorities, and it helps staff, in terms of, especially with a new council director coming in, recognizing where we've identified our priorities and when things come from outside of it, how we need to manage those things. So this should help be a roadmap for you as well, Ms. House, in your journey that's just starting out here, day two. Anything else? We have that wonderful line item that says other. If there are other things to come before us before we adjourn today, Ms. Prince mentioned that we have library board at 2. We have council at 3:30. And I think that's what we've got. If there's nothing else to come before us, then we are adjourned.
Yeah, I figured you were coming over.
Okay, good. Great. I'll see you then.